it's really difficult for a candidate to come in who is saddled with the policies that are on.
But let's say.
Oh boy.
Let's say, just throwing out a
look
wild
at you trying to preserve the relationship all of a sudden.
A wild hypothetical. Let's say the candidate wasn't part of the government. Let's say the candidate did have a lot of economic experience. Let's say the candidate did deal with crises. Let's say the candidate had a plan to deal with the challenges in the here and now.
Sneaky, you're running as an outsider.
I am an outsider.
Wow.
Wow, indeed, Mr. John Stewart, if that is your real name. Oh, wait, that isn't your real name. Anyway, James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Corbett Report podcast. Of course, I am your host, James Corbett, coming to you, as always, from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in late April of 2025 with episode 475 of the Corbett Report podcast. Meet Mark Carney, globalist insider. Because, yes, if you are paying attention, although the current Prime Minister of unselected Prime Minister of Canada, Mark Carney, likes to portray himself as a political outsider who has never held office. Therefore, he's trustworthy, guys. I think, as I hope my audience knows by now, Mark Carney is no outsider to the real systems of power that govern over us, not these political parties that are put out as the birdcage liner in the globalist system, but the actual institutions of power. But today in the podcast, I'm going to elaborate on that and show you precisely why Mark Carney is not what Canada needs. And if you are watching this podcast at the time of its release here in late April of 2025, well, this will be particularly timely because, as you may or may not know, Canada is going to the polls on April 28th. To have a selection, yay, and that selection will decide whether or not Mark Carney and the Liberal Party of Canada get to maintain their control of Parliament or whether they will be kicked out in favor of another one of the selected candidates, probably Pierre Poilievre. But if you are watching this here in late April of 2025, you may be gobsmacked, like many others, including myself, to see the drastic, incredible change in fortunes that the Liberal Party of Canada has undergone in the past few months, because, in case you didn't know, Trudeau and the Liberals were almost universally reviled and vilified by, say, the end of 2024. Everyone in Canada pretty much had enough of Liberal Party rule under Pierre Trudeau's son, Justin Castro. But, amazingly enough, here we are in April of 2025, and according to the latest polls, the Liberals are actually ahead in this selection circus cycle. So, it looks like the Liberal Party of Canada, now led by unselected Prime Minister Mark Carney, may actually maintain their position of power in the Parliament. That is a remarkable, drastic change of events in a few months, and what happened in those few months in order to bring about that radical change in Canadian public opinion? Well, we'll get more into that in today's episode. But I think today, let's familiarize ourselves with the current and presumably soon-to-be future Prime Minister of Canada, his real background, what he really represents, because he is not an outsider, as he likes to portray himself, but a consummate insider. And just for the record, I of course should state, take these CBC polls of the selection cycle for what they're worth. And if people want more on my take on polls and how they are used to manipulate the minds of the public, you can see my previous Propaganda Watch episode on polls show people aren't buying establishment BS. Propaganda Watch. I hope you will watch or refamiliarize yourself with that because it's an important piece of the propaganda puzzle. But moving right along, where do we begin if we want to know more about who Mark Carney really is, what he really believes, what he really stands for? Well, let's start with the bare basics. Let's find out what the bastion of truthiness itself, Wikipedia, can tell us about Mr. Mark Carney. Well, we can learn some basic facts about his biography. For example, Mark Joseph Carney is the 24th Prime Minister of Canada. And he was born in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories and raised in Edmonton, Alberta, and for a Calgarian like myself, that's already a red flag. But more seriously, he graduated with a bachelor's degree in economics from Harvard University in 1988, then studied at the University of Oxford, where he earned a master's degree in 93 and a doctorate in 95, which all sounds very impressive to the average Joe Schmo on the street, but hopefully, again, is setting off some alarm bells for people who know the types of people that come out of institutions like Harvard or the University of Oxford and its interesting connections and associations. Anyway, he went on from that directly into another organization that I'm sure my listeners will be familiar with. He held various roles at Goldman Sachs before joining the Bank of Canada as a deputy governor in 2003. So think of that. Less than a decade out of college, already having served various roles at Goldman Sachs, and suddenly the deputy governor of the Bank of Canada. That's a pretty meteoric rise, isn't it? In 2004, he's named as senior associate deputy minister for the Department of Finance. In 2007, he was named governor of the Bank of Canada, where he was installed just in time to preside over the Canadian government's response to the 2008 financial crisis. And as we all know, as has become economic lore of the past decade and a half, Canada survived the financial crisis fairly well. Canadian banks and institutions actually did all right during the crisis. So it must have been that amazing leadership of Mark Carney, or so he wants us to believe. Then he led the Canadian Central Bank unit until 2013, when he was appointed as the governor of the Bank of England, where he led the British Central Bank's response to Brexit and the early phase of the COVID-19 scamdemic. From there, he served as chair and head of impact investing at Brookfield Asset Management and as chair of the board of directors of Bloomberg LP. He was also appointed the United Nations Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance. And he also worked as one of many informal advisors to Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as it says here, during the COVID-19 scamdemic. Although there may be more to that story, and was made chair of the Liberal Party's Economic Growth Task Force in September 2024, blah, blah, blah. As partial as this biography is, and as much as it leaves out about other important institutions and bodies that Carney has presided over and or served on in the intervening decades, this still, I think, gives you at least a sense that this is no outsider to the real system of control, economic, financial, and otherwise, that is governing over the planet, not the Canadian government or parliament itself, or not one of those lowly member of parliament selected positions. No, this man has been in real positions to do real economic damage or prosperity, bring prosperity to all. And so it is in that context that we have to evaluate Mark Carney and his record. So let's start today by taking it from the horse's mouth, because why not give the devil his due and see what he has to say for himself? And in order to do that, we're going to go to the website of the TFM Report. You may or may not remember that Chris and Jody had me on as a guest on the TFM Report in the past. If not, I'll link it up here so you can go and watch that interview. But they have covered Carney and his connections and what he has written in the past. Specifically, if you go to the Research Packs part of their website, you can find, well, a number of different reports and things that are worth your time and attention that are here for download, including Mark Carney Values. And if you click on that, you will get a PDF of this book called Values, Building a Better World for All, published by Penguin Random House Canada in 2021 and penned by none other than Mark Carney. And yes, Mr. Carney wrote an entire book about the concept of value and values, and what that means in our present world, and, well, ultimately what it means for any would-be future leader of Canada, let alone any other nation. And, well, I won't presume to summarize the book myself. Why don't we let Mark Carney do it himself, in his own voice, from his own audiobook reading of Values.
An overarching theme that runs through this book is that we cannot take the market system, which produces such plenty and so many solutions, for granted. Markets are essential to progress, to finding solutions to our most pressing problems, but they don't exist in a vacuum. Markets are social constructs, whose effectiveness is determined partly by the rules of the state and partly by the values of society. If left unattended, they will corrode those values. We must concentrate on rebuilding social capital to make markets work. To do so, individuals and their firms must rediscover their sense of solidarity and responsibility for the system. More broadly, by rebasing valuation on society's values, we can create platforms of prosperity.
By rebasing valuation on society's values, we can create platforms of prosperity. Rebasing valuation on reevaluation of all values. Why is that ringing a bell? Well, yes, as the philosophically literate and informed in the audience might recognize, that is a specific philosophical idea with some controversial and potentially provocative roots. I'll leave a hint in the show notes here for today's episode in case you were interested in pursuing that and following up on that. But anyway, an intriguing concept, but I think we get the idea of what he is floating in this book. Essentially that, yes, value, of course, has an economic meaning that's derived from market value, but we have societal values, and we have to reorient our society towards societal values, not simply market values. And one can imagine the types of things that flow from this in both the exoteric as well as the esoteric sense. And again, we get hints of that from within the text itself, just this small passage that we were hearing from. We must concentrate on rebuilding social capital to make markets worse. To do so, individuals and their firms must rediscover their sense of solidarity and responsibility for the system. Indeed. Again, I think you get the sense of where this is going. But if it is true that value is in the eye of the beholder, then the question is, what kind of beholder is Mark Carney? And again, I'm going to let him speak for himself in this passage from the very end of the book.
We have a choice. We can continue to let financial valuation narrow our values, or we can create an ecosystem in which society's values broaden the market's conception of value. In this way, individual creativity and market dynamism will be channeled to achieve society's highest goals.
Now, I trust that my experienced, informed, literate audience can see through the high-minded, highfalutin globaloney of Mark Carney to the real core of what he is saying underneath that highfalutin language and the nice mealy-mouthed platitudes that politicians and those of their ilk like to spout at the public. But just to make sure everyone is on the same page, let's go through this and go through the types of ideas that he is wrestling with in his book Values, let alone the types of ideas that he has talked about in his many, many interviews and public appearances, because once you do so, I think you will discover that he, Mark Carney, is devoted to, for example, the absolute existential threat of annihilation of the human species that is the climate crisis, which, of course, in his valuation, is the carte blanche for governments to rule by crisis, to use emergency measures, and to do anything it takes in order to combat this crisis. But not just governments. Of course, as is a key part of the things that he's arguing there, for example, in Values, is that companies and individuals have to take on their own responsibilities for this crisis and have to exert pressure upwards. Not only the government coming down, but people have to exert pressure on their bosses and their companies. Hey, what's your net zero plan, Mr. CEO? And if you don't have one, we're going to publicly shame you, etc., etc. So there's that aspect to what is being talked about by Carney here. There's also the fascism in the real, true, literal textbook definition sense of that word, of the melding of private and public structures of governance into that fascist confluence, which is these days covered over with the nice sounding mealy mouth platitude of public-private cooperation. Or, as Carney talks about and writes about specifically in Values, Once again, the entire book is there up on the TFM report, so you can go read it for yourself and don't take my or anyone else's word for it. See what he wrote for himself, but you will see that he talks about, for example, stakeholder capitalism. Where have I heard that term before? Who is the one who's been trying to bring that into public discourse for the past several decades? Oh, right, Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum, Birds of a Feather. And you'll see, of course, Carney talking about things like social capital, which ultimately leads to such things as social credit. Who gets to evaluate and value your social capital? Well, the government will when it starts to implement its TRICOM-like series of controls over the population in the name of saving us from the climate crisis, of course. And of course, all of this is guided by the same technocratic vision of society, which Carney knows a thing or two about, being in a position of technocratic control over the economies of Canada and England and now the world because of the UN Special Envoy on Climate Finance position that he's held, let alone the Bank for International Settlements and other posts that he's held, more on which later. So I think those are the types of things that are really underlying the language that is being used to obfuscate and sound nice, sound like the kind of things that Canadians and those around the world would love to embrace. Yes, here's someone who cares about the people and the planet and wants to save us and bring us together under this private-public cooperation, stakeholder capitalism for environmental sustainable development goals, etc. Anyway, we do not have to speculate on these aspects of what this global oni actually means in plain English, because he's said it for himself. For example, just as one example on the recent campaign trail, reclaimthenet.org notes that, for example, in Canada, Mark Carney vows internet speech crackdown if elected, citing online pollution of misogyny conspiracies. So this is in reference to a routine run-of-the-mill campaign stop that he made recently in Ontario, where he was asked some uncomfortable questions and managed to deflect by talking about, oh, there are many serious issues that we're dealing with, ignoring the criticism that has just been lobbed his way. One of them is the sea of misogyny, anti-Semitism, hatred, and conspiracy theories. This sort of pollution online that washes over our virtual borders from the United States, because we all know all of this flows from the US anyway, right? And yes, surprise, surprise, exactly as Trudeau did during, for example, when people were criticizing him for his handling of the scandemic and the crackdown on protests, etc., it was the misogynist, anti-Semitic, hate-spewing, US-funded seditionists that were behind the protests, the trucker convoy, etc. As Trudeau said, winning fake news story of the year for 2022, was it? As you may or may not recall. However, here it is coming from Carney's mouth, because Carney, as we shall see in this exploration today, is nothing more than a more savvy, more competent, more informed, more ideologically devoted Justin Trudeau. Trudeau was, as I have said before and I will say again, nothing more than a drama teacher who took the part of Prime Minister and played it well for his puppet string pullers. But amongst those people pulling on his strings was Mark Carney. Again, a point that we'll see later in greater detail later in today's episode. But not to say that, of course, Carney does not have his own string pullers. Of course he does. But he is higher up on the global chain than someone like Trudeau. And here he is saying the exact same things that Canadians reviled Trudeau for. Here they're coming from Carney, but for some reason, a lot of Canadians seem to be lapping it up. Or at least the CBC wants you to believe that. Anyway, this article goes on to talk about some of the online hate speech laws and other forms of Orwellian internet censorship crackdown that the Liberal Party under Trudeau has tried and failed to pass in recent years, Bill C-36, Bill C-63, and then goes on to note that Carney's little impromptu speech here on his routine campaign stop didn't include specifics about how he was going to crack down, but this is usually code for, we'll make it up later. But the intent is clear. The Liberals are once again oiling up the guillotine of speech regulation, ready to let it fall on anything remotely edgy, impolite, or God forbid, unpopular. And of course, it's only the Liberals who do this, right? The Conservatives, if they get in power, will only limit the free speech of, say, people who want to protest what's happening in Palestine. But that's the good kind of censorship, right, Conservatives? Anyway, This is the type of thing that Carney is devoted to. These are the types of values that he values and that he will make very clear in his years in power if he should be selected. But again, let's not put words in his mouth. Let's take them from his own mouth. And we'll look at specifically what Carney said during the Freedom Convoy there in Canada a few years ago. Again, my listeners should be well aware and familiar with that story and the incredible, absolutely nightmare dystopic crackdown on protest that happened in Canada, the criminalization of dissent that I have documented on this podcast before. Please check the links in the show notes if you need to refamiliarize yourself with that subject matter. But what was Carney's role during that time? Because as we know, he was a total political outsider, not holding any political office at the time. So he must have just been off in England doing his Bank of England thing and not worrying at all what was going on in Canada, right? Wrong, of course. He did have things to say and, in fact, was whispering in the ear of Prime Minister Puppet-in-Chief Trudeau at that time. But let's take this from the aforementioned TFM report in which Chris and Jody, on a not so recent, last year edition of their TFM report, were going through Carney's public statements and pronouncements and dissected a little editorial that he wrote about the seditionists in Ottawa during the Freedom Convoy.
This was Mark Carney, just in case you still think, though he's pleasant, he's a pleasant man.
Pleasant to look at, perhaps, but not a pleasant man.
Here's just a few paragraphs from what he wrote in 2022 on the convoy, just after the Emergency Measures Act wrote out. And this is a very long article. Email us at info@tfmreport.com, and I will send you the article because I saved it and archived it. It's a long, and the words are just vicious, but I brought some of it here with us today. It's time to end the sedition in Ottawa by enforcing the law and following the money.
In our capital city, many people have been terrorized for more than a week. Women fleeing abuse have been harassed. Many elderly have been too afraid to venture outside their homes for groceries. Families have been deprived of sleep for days on end by the constant barrage of 100 decibel noise. Control over the city's downtown, which includes the parliamentary precinct, was ended by the police and taken over by what the chair of the Police Services Board describes as an insurrection.
Now, did any of that happen?
No.
Okay.
Well, the police did definitely end it, but they were the insurrection.
But
it wasn't us.
Harassment and the abuse and the terrorizing.
And that was police. And, you know, somebody mentioned on the last show, or no, maybe it wasn't on the last show, but somebody made mention in a meeting I was in yesterday that they met me at the Swiss Hotel because they had parked beside my vehicle and my vehicle had been ransacked and vandalized. Right. They left his Audi, beautiful, brand new, expensive car alone, but trashed my vehicle. And what we found out from police later on was that over 100 vehicles, all with Canadian flags on them, all got trashed that night. So it was actually the people that were peacefully dancing and praying and singing and sharing their food and sharing their shelter with the citizens of Ottawa. It was them that was harassed by the citizens of Ottawa. Either their vehicles were smashed or their stuff was stolen. I don't know how many barbecues and wood was stolen from people on the streets. And then, of course, the police came in on the 18th and 19th and smashed and destroyed everybody else.
So just finishing. But now, in its second week, no one should ever have any doubt. This is sedition. That's a word I never thought I'd use in Canada. It means incitement of resistance or to insurrection against lawful authority. On Sunday, authorities began to draw the line, declaring a state of emergency, which was the right thing to do. Well, the law disagrees with you, Mark Carney. So that is his tone. That is his tone with people who now he did say something about you have a right to peaceful protest, but this was not protesting. This was insurrection. Right. So that is his tone towards people who
this is the guy redefining value.
Right. They were just fighting for their universal rights.
No, redefining value. If they were fighting for climate change, we'd still be out there and it'd be allowed. But because we were fighting for inalienable rights and the right to choose and the right to informed consent, No, that has no value in society.
I think Jody hits the nail right on the head there at the end. Yes, if this was about the values, for example, protesting for climate change, Just Stop Oil, some sort of nonsense like that, absolutely, Mark Carney would not only have not written an op-ed calling them seditionists for protesting in such a way, he would have applauded their actions, exactly as we saw, for example, during the depths of the scandemic, when it was absolutely egregious to have these people out there protesting on the streets about the lockdowns and all of the mandates, etc. But it was totally fine for large-scale protests of people, for example, protesting George Floyd, because that's the good cause. You can protest. You can't protest for that. And just to underline and document the hypocrisy, yes, here is the Globe and Mail article, archived, of course, from February of 2022, the op-ed by Mark Carney, "It's Time to End the Sedition in Ottawa by Enforcing the Law and Following the Money." And just in case you think that that sedition in that headline was by the headline writer and not by Carney himself, no, as he goes on to make clear, he was talking specifically for himself about what he thought about these protesters in the Freedom Convoy. Drawing the line means choking off the money that financed this occupation, he wrote. Obviously, a forewarning to the Canadian public about the absolute incredible travesty of injustice that was about to occur with the seizing of bank accounts that, again, I have documented before. But he goes on to spell it out in black and white. "But by now, anyone sending money to the convoy should be in no doubt. You are funding sedition." Which, of course, is a pretty serious charge that brings with it some pretty serious legal penalties, doesn't it? And that's exactly the types of values that Carney holds. If you are one of these horrible, anti-Semitic, misogynist, racist, whatever IST word I can think of, type of people who cares about your personal freedom, we will call you seditionists and take away your right to use your own money, to interact in the banking system, to have financial ties, to support your family. We will do anything it takes to stop you. That, of course, is Mark Carney's stipulation of the values, but he won't even stand by them. He won't even stand up for those stated on the record values that he displayed in 2022, because here in April of 2025, we have this from Reclaim the Net. Canadian PM Mark Carney downplays role in Freedom Convoy crackdown despite backing emergency measures and calling protest sedition and urging financial chokehold, in which it notes that sedition is what Carney decided to brand the civil protest at the Freedom Convoy in an op-ed published in the Globe and Mail on February 7, 2022, and true to his previous roles in big finance, proposed to put an end to the protest. He called it this occupation by choking off the money that funded it. Now, given his current affiliation with the Liberal Party, the new Prime Minister was asked to send a message to those Canadians who lost trust in the previous cabinet because of its handling of the protest. Instead of doing that, Carney first sought to distance himself from himself, saying that he has only been a politician for 2 months, and claiming that he took on his new role because he knew this country needed big change. Wow, playing both sides of the fence. That, I mean, man, that is incredible for a tap-dancing politician. He is a consummate political insider, if only because he knows how to play the game extremely well. What are you talking about? Yes, the country needs big change, and I've only been a politician for 2 months. I had nothing to do with advising the Prime Minister about what to do during the convoy. Oh, wait, he did, documentably. Again, we'll get into that more later in today's exploration, but he will not even stand up for his own actions and values when he is cornered on them and finds them to be politically, disadvantageous to say that in plain English. So that's the type of mealy-mouthed globaloney politician we are dealing with. Another slimeball. And again, one that marks him out as a consummate political insider, I would say. Well, if you want to know more about Mark Carney and who he really is and what his real agenda may be, let's turn to a source that I think is worth your time and attention. And that source comes from someone who should be familiar to Corporate Report listeners. I'm talking about Dan Dix of PressForTruth.ca. I trust that Canadians in the independent media space will have seen Dan and his work before. Corporate Reporteers will be familiar because of our many, many, many conversations in the past, including a rather relevant and important one from 2015, where I talked to Dan about his his documentary on the Trudeau deception, Dissecting the Trudeau Hype with Dan Dix from October of 2015, where, yes, even before Trudeau got underway as prime minister and began his decade of terror over the Canadian population, there was Dan warning about it well in advance. And again, I can point to his June 2015 Trudeau deception documentary, a short 16-minute summary of why Trudeau was not the hope and change Obamasiah for Canada at that time and should not be believed. His political hype was only that, hype and PR. Dan laid it out in 2015. So what does Dan have to say about Mark Carney and the Mark Carney deception? Well, he has just put out an incredible, very good, detailed, and to-the-point video called Everything You Need to Know About Mark Carney in Under 7 Minutes. So if you don't want to hear James Corbett reading passages from Mark Carney's book and doing all this, oh my God, all this research, here is a great short summary that, at the very least, you can send it to your TikTok-addicted attention deficit deprived friends out in normie space to hopefully get through to them about what Mark Carney really is. I will definitely commend this video to your attention, and I will now hold my breath while you pause this video and go watch that video. Okay, now that we're ready and the table has been set, the deck has been cleared, whatever analogy you want to use, let's turn to Dan Dix, because I recently had a chance to talk to him about Mark Carney, who Mark Carney really is, what his agenda may really be. And I think Dan has some interesting points to make. So I started by asking Dan Dix of PressForTruth.ca about how it can possibly be that the Canadian public, who has just lived through the last 10 years of the Trudeau deception and have finally caught up to Dan and other conspiracy realists who were warning a decade plus ago about what Trudeau really represented, finally understanding that they were had, how is it that they are falling for the Carney deception?
Well, they're certainly ready for change. You know, they have that hopium that is happening again. And that's, it seems to be a 10-year cycle in Canada that people get fed up with the guy prior and they're ready to accept anybody for, you know, to replace him. I witnessed the exact same thing with Stephen Harper. Canadians hated that guy and they were absolutely ready for anything. Well, now they're ready for a global elitist, centralized bankster, WEF puppet, Bilderberg insider. Why? Because he's, you know, saying that he's, you know, gonna fix the economy. It's absolutely wild. But yeah, I really wish Canadians would recognize the cycle time and time again that we're being pushed through to elect these, you know, these new leaders every year. It's clear that he has not been elected. He has been selected. In fact, when he was chosen as the Liberal leader, it was, I think it was like 80% or something like that of his party chose him to be the replacement. And only 40% of the people actually voted for that, had that ballot put in there. So that actually makes up less than 1% of the entire Canadian population who has ever voted for this guy. So he wasn't a sitting member of parliament. You know, he's never received any kind of a vote from a Canadian voter for anything. And yet he's miraculously today the Prime Minister of Canada. And, you know, it was way back in May of 2024, almost 1 year ago now, that I was suggesting that the Bilderberg Group was talking about potentially, you know, it was at Bilderberg that I was suggesting that they may be putting him in line to be the next Prime Minister. And here we are 11 months later running.
Here we are. Refresh my memory. He was at the last Bilderberg?
He was at the last, like, 3 Bilderbergs for sure.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at his Wikipedia page, it'll say he was there in 2011 and 2013 or something like that, and that was it. But no, he was there last year. He was there the year before. He was there the year before that. And I actually got him on film each one of those times. One of the times, I almost got to ask him about becoming the next prime minister, but he ran past me so fast. The guy jogs at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, for an old guy, I got to say, he's pretty darn fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he's running away from reporters, I'm sure that helps the speed. But, you know, the remarkable thing about this, to me, is that, yeah, they do, of course, we know from Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope, and everyone, we've heard this many times. The whole point is to create the left and the left version of a candidate and the right version of a candidate so you can throw the bums out every selection and feel like you're doing something. But this time it's remarkable. It's like you're throwing that old Trudeau bum out for the guy in the same party. What? Well, why not? What does it matter? Because as you and I, and hopefully the audience knows by this point, the left-right game is not the actual game. That is not how politics really works. So let's talk about some of Carney's deeper connections, which I know you have talked about and dug up before. For example, does Carney have any relations to, say, the Epstein network that you know of?
Well, indeed he does, you know, and I started thinking about this connection when I watched him get sworn in. And he pledged allegiance to King Charles III, who is obviously connected to a pedophile network through Jimmy Savile. That's well known, well documented. And in looking into that, I saw that Maxwell, who is Ghislaine Maxwell's father, is the person who introduced Ghislaine Maxwell to the Queen, and to royalty. And the Epsteins and Maxwells were able to infiltrate, you know, royalty, get themselves all the way to even the Queen's own personal cabin. And so there's already this connection between the royals and this pedophile network. And now we have photos of Ghislaine Maxwell with Mark Carney. And these aren't just, you know, random photobombs. These are like they're hanging out together at a music festival in 2013. And the important thing about that, you know, timing of this all is that this is actually 5 years after Jeffrey Epstein, the boyfriend of Ghislaine Maxwell, was convicted of sex crimes. We now have the future prime minister hanging out with these people. So the extent to which he's involved with that remains to be seen. But the fact of the matter is he has been pictured with them. He's obviously compromised to some degree. Whether or not they hold any, you know, blackmail over him, you know, I don't know. That remains to be seen. But we know he's connected, you know, through Ghislaine Maxwell. So that's a very easy way to control somebody, especially a prime minister of a country.
Holding my breath, waiting for Trump to release the Epstein files, and oh yeah, here's the Carney blackmail footage. I don't know if we're going to see that, but hey, it could be out there. At any rate, I believe the official story is that isn't it Carney's wife is friends with Ghislaine's sister or something like that, some kind of tangential relation, but they have been pictured together. You have shown that in your videos before. Brock will show it here on screen for people if they haven't seen it yet. All right. That's interesting enough and certainly points in a certain direction, but you uncovered something that I had not seen actually until I saw your video on this. Apparently, Mark Carney has a relation to the Tavistock Institute, the infamous Tavistock Institute there in England. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this one's pretty wild. It turns out Mark Carney has a daughter named Sophia Carney. And back when he was the governor of the Bank of Canada of the Bank of England in 2013, when he was living over there, his daughter started expressing a desire to check out this institute. So he enlisted his daughter into the Tavistock Institute. Now, for people who don't know, the Tavistock Gender Clinic has been since shut down. They got sued by over 1,000 families because of some insane atrocities they were doing to children. Essentially, they're brainwashing young children into getting life-altering surgeries, taking hormones and puberty blockers, and you know, some of them, you know, have since detransitioned. And this is why they are, you know, suing them for being brainwashed into this stuff. This is the place that Mark Carney allowed his child to go to. Since then, she now identifies as non-binary. She believes that she's neither a female or a male. She's neither of these things. And he also promises that moving forward, his administration and his government is always going to offer transgender surgeries, puberty blockers, hormone treatments, and anything without exclusion, including children. This is part of his kind of platform. And his own daughter identifies by they, them pronouns, considers herself to be non-male or female, and was brainwashed by the Tavistock Institute. I mean, this is the guy who's going to be, you know, leading Canada. He can't even lead his own family. It's unbelievable.
You know, it's interesting, again, people thinking that they're going to throw out Trudeau and everything that he stood for by replacing him by the exact same ideology, the exact same party, the exact same. They're changing nothing except the fact that, oh, I guess this was a banker, so he knows about economics. It's crazy to me. If you had a chance to address the Canadian people who are falling for this deception, what would you say to them?
Oh, man. I would say just, you know, to shut the TVs off and just reject the tune out of the politics. Like, it's just a big ballerina show. It's more choreographed than a ballet. You know, it's like we often say, two wings of the same bird, smoke and mirrors. It's just a massive distraction. And something I'm recognizing with people who do give into this and play into this, and even with social media influencers online, they're getting the massive algorithms. They're getting all the views. You know, if I started championing for one of these guys, I would probably start skyrocketing in views as well, because that's what the system wants. They want us playing into this nonsense. You know, they want us, you know, giving up that eventually giving up that sovereignty to, you know, to these guys who are going to give it over to the global oligarchy, really. But I don't know. I think the COVID 1984 pandemic kind of exposed me to the fact that we got a lot of work to do here in Canada. Like, the Canadian people are truly brainwashed themselves, you know? And I saw that as a result of all the masked people walking around post-COVID 1984. And I'm seeing it in this election season. People are actually getting behind Carney. They forget that they got behind Trudeau and they hate Trudeau now. They got behind Harper, but then they hated Harper. And then they got behind Trudeau and then they hated Trudeau. They're going to hate Mark Carney when they realize who this guy truly is and what he's truly all about. So I wish they would just tune out, focus on, you know, looking to yourselves rather than the government to help you. Look to getting out of debt. Look to becoming self-sustainable, maybe with like a backyard garden, so you don't have to rely on banks or grocery stores or governments or anything like that. That's what the focus should be moving forward, rather than, you know, looking for the right, you know, person to vote in, especially when it's totally rigged. As I often say, the system isn't broken, it's fixed.
Very apt. Yes, absolutely. And yes, exactly. That resonates with me strongly. Centralized, decentralized, local, community-based action is better than this national politics game. But just for the heart of thinking, the people who are stuck in that left-right paradigm, you're not saying that, hey guys, go vote Poilievre. That'll be the way out of this mess, are you?
Well, that's an important part to make, is no. Anytime I do criticize certain politicians, you get, well, what are you saying? Are you saying we should be voting for the other guy? No, absolutely not. You know, he's going to be potentially just as bad. At this stage in the game, it really doesn't matter which guy is selected here. Generally, you know, the agendas of the global elite are going to be carried out. That's why I earlier called them the controlled opposition, because I don't think it even at this stage in the game, it doesn't even matter. But, I am actually proud to say I've never once voted for any single politician ever in my life. I find statism to be kind of a hive cult mind. And I'm not suggesting that anybody vote for any politician and do exactly as you were and I were just alluding to there. Work on yourself, work on your family, work on your backyard garden, work on getting out of debt, ignore all the politicians. I mean, there are certain guys who do talk about good things. Maxime Bernier says a lot of good things. but he's not allowed in the debates. And, he wouldn't even get anywhere, even if we tried. So I'm just not even going to go there, because, you know, when you vote, you are now a part of the problem.
You know, very good point. And you have the clean, perfect track record of never having participated in that nonsense. I, on the other hand, did vote in the first time I was able to vote, and when I was 18 or 19 or whenever the selection came around, I did my civic duty and I ticked the box and put it in the ballot box and did my part. And oh, the shame that redounds to the present day over me because of that act. Oh well. And you know what, I'll even tell you who I voted for. It was NDP. Wow, I have come a long way in a couple of decades. Anyway, hey, we were all young and dumb once, weren't we? All right, so you alluded to it before, obviously attending Bilderberg every year, getting pictures of Carney every year. Do we know yet where Bilderberg 2025 is going to be, and is Dan Dix going to be there?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be in Stockholm, Sweden. We got an inkling of that last year, actually, and now it's starting to look like that is indeed the case. There are a couple of 5-star hotels that are booked out, and it's looking to be surrounding June 13th, 14th, 15th, somewhere around there, in Stockholm, Sweden. And, I haven't missed many. I don't think I've missed one since 2012, other than when I couldn't travel through the pandemic and I first started going in 2006. So I have every full intention of going this year, especially when it's such a big, a year in Canadian politics. And, we got this guy who's formerly been on the steering committee of Bilderberg himself, who's now the Prime Minister of Canada. It would be interesting to see if he's going to be there this year. I do plan on going to Sweden in June. So people can stay tuned for all of my coverage on the upcoming Bilderberg meeting at pressfortruth.ca.
Excellent. Dan, thank you for doing what you do, and I'm looking forward to your continued coverage.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
Once again, that is Dan Dix of pressfortruth.ca, and once again, if you have not taken the time to pause this video and go watch that Everything You Need to Know About Mark Carney in Under 7 Minutes video, I suggest you do so now. There is a lot of information in there that documents, yes, some of the less publicized pieces of information connecting Mark Carney to the globalist networks of interest, including Epstein/Maxwell. And just to back that up and document it, put it on the record, we have this from the Toronto Sun just a couple of months ago. Carney campaign pushes back on Maxwell photos, says they are not friends. Talking about the photos of Mark Carney literally side by side, palling around with Ghislaine Maxwell, that is convicted child trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell, who trafficked to no one, as the meme has it these days. And don't worry, guys. Yes, of course they were cavorting around and were chummy, but it's not what it seems. Don't believe your lying eyes. So the original post of this photo pointed to a photo of Carney and his wife, Diana Fox Carney, standing with Maxwell, the British socialite turned sex trafficker and Epstein associate who's serving 20 years in jail. As a child, the woman you reference, the source here won't even say the name Maxwell, the woman you reference went to the same high school as Mr. Carney's wife's sister. While they have bumped into each other in public settings, including the 11-year-old photos that you sent, they're not friends. Yeah, guys. Again, they're just hanging around literally side by side. No relation whatsoever. Just this distant wife, sisters, friends, uncles, dogs. What are we talking about again? That woman you referenced? Who cares? So, interesting connection, isn't it? But, of course, some people come along to muddy the waters, and so Reuters fact-checkers will come along to set the record straight. Image of Carney, Maxwell, and Tom Hanks on a beach is likely AI, say experts. Talking about some image that has been making the rounds of them sitting side by side, that doesn't even look like Maxwell to me. But anyway, yeah. No, that doesn't look like a real image, does it? does it? And so, of course, Reuters can come along and say, look, see, this image of Carney and Maxwell is fake, and you shouldn't believe it. And they may even be right about this image, but guess what? This pollutes the search term, so now when you're looking for images of Carney and Maxwell, you better believe Google's going to send you to this fact check by Reuters so that you can think that it's all just some sort of AI-generated nonsense. No, there are no real, documentable, verifiable, admitted photos of them together. Reuters has debunked this one, right? You see how that operates. But, you know, conspiracy wingnut freak job realists like myself and others may think, who would actually have an interest in seeding fake images like this and trying to propagate them out so that they can be debunked by Reuters and the other fact checkers? Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe Carney and his campaign might have something to... No! Silly, crazy conspiracy theory. They would never deliberately put out fake images that could then be debunked in order to pollute the search for Carney and Maxwell, right? That would never happen. That's a crazy... Well, how about this weird story that came out recently? Spread of fake campaign pins. Disgusting, says Senior Tory. So, make of this what you will, but here are a bunch of campaign pins that were being distributed not by conservatives, as the pins themselves might make you believe. A vote for Carney is a vote for Wexit. Lock Justin up. Make Canada great again. Free Albert. So all of these things that are trying to get you is to associate the opposition to Carney with Make America Great Again and Trump and Trumpisms, lock her up, lock Justin up, these types of things are being conflated. These pins were not made by the Conservative Party of Canada or people associated with them. No, they were made and distributed by people in Carney's campaign as a presumably type of false flag event where they're trying to get people to associate the Conservatives with MAGA and all of that. Interesting. So make of this story what you will. Look into it. Carney, for his part, said, "This is I don't want to have anything to do with this." And the people who were responsible for this have been reassigned. Not fired, reassigned. Interesting, yeah. Anyway, those are the types of shenanigans that go on in campaigns like this and that make it maybe a little bit more plausible that the campaign would insert fake images of Carney and Maxwell to pollute the search terms. But anyway, make of all that what you will and all of the connections and globalist networks and other Tavistock Institute craziness that Dan Dix has documented, make of that what you will. But let's go back to the fundamental question that we're asking here today, which is what would Canada look like under a year, several years, a decade of Carney rule? What is Carney's Canada going to look like if it comes to pass? Well, again, we could go and start dissecting his public statements and his various pronouncements in various fora. For example, who can forget when he appeared on Bloomberg for probably the 800,000th time to talk about the COP26 summit that was taking place in Glasgow in 2021? Net zero, a ruthless, relentless focus for G-fans, Mark Carney. You'll remember G-fans, of course, because it was the topic of conversation, amongst other things, when I talked to Whitney Webb in November of 2021 on exposing how green finance is monopolizing the planet. So we talked about G-fans and the plan to monopolize the world's resources by the ultra-wealthy for the benefit of the ultra-wealthy. Speaking of which, you could go watch, for example, Mark Carney at the World Leaders Forum talking about, as he often does, the $100 trillion that are going to be necessary to convert the entire world over to green finance and green energy sources. He's talked about this at length in many presentations and speeches over the years and given many, many slides of documented information on this. Because, again, it's all very financial and economic. Don't worry, guys. Don't think about it. Just trust him. He's the expert. And he's going to tell you how these trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in investable capital should be directed in the interest of the green transition. Yay, green bond issuance has tripled since 2017, etc., etc. We could watch Carney talking at the Bloomberg Green Summit back in 2021 on investing in the climate future, where, again, he's back on his hobby horse talking about the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that will be needed to grease the skids of this global takeover. And again, Davos 2021, carbon markets, where he was appearing alongside such infamous characters as Bill Gates to talk about the creation of carbon markets and how that will steer us into this brave new world future of carbon finance and carbon markets and carbon credits and social credits. Well, and while you're at it, as a little bonus, you can take a look at the interesting painting that Carney has in his background there and the Masonic checkerboards floor on that painting and the fake windows in that painting and whatever is going on there, whatever esoteric message is being sent in the background of that. Well, you could certainly take that tack and start to look at the esoteric meaning of a potential Carney prime ministership, as I did with Jakob Nordengaard, recent guest on the Corbett Report, where we talked about the externalization of the money masters and the bizarre Blavatsky, Alice Bailey prediction of 2025 and what this might have to do with climate finance and the externalization of the money masters. Fascinating conversation. I hope you have checked that out. If not, I will throw it in the show notes so you can check it out. But let's get back to today's main task again. What would Mark Carney's Canada look like if not challenged? Well, if that is your question, boy, do I have a resource for you. It is located at theeconomictruth.org, which you will hopefully remember is the website of previous Corbett Report guest John Sneisen, because you will remember that I talked to him last month about the Young Global Leaders Club, the World Economic Forum program to identify, pick, groom, and ensconce in power various young global leaders to penetrate the cabinets, as, of course, Klaus Schwab has infamously portrayed it. Well, we talked about that last month on Solutions Watch, and John Sneisen has just put together this very interesting resource that I will highly commend to your attention. It is linked up in the show notes if you need it. It is at theeconomictruth.org. It's under the title, What Would Mark Carney's Canada Look Like If Not Challenged? And it starts with this strategic forecast for Mark Carney's technocratic transformation of Canada. This is fascinating, and it goes through the various phases of a potential Mark Carney prime ministership and what would take place in those phases. Installation and optics, CBDC rollout and ESG mandates, criminalization of dissent and surveillance, full techno-social reset, themes across all phases, the final outcome. And you'll see there's specific months with specific predictions of things that may happen in this time frame. It's fascinating and very interesting and thought-provoking, and certainly is based on many things Mark Carney has said and has promoted in the past. So it is definitely worth taking a look at this and seeing how such an agenda could unfold step by step. But I will say, interestingly enough, this document and the specific predictions, specific months and phases, etc., was not created by John Sneisen. I'll just leave that there. We will find out in a moment where this actually sources from, and it's interesting and surprising. But anyway, having said that, down at the bottom of this article, you will find a list of downloads. For example, Mark Carney's Insights, Mark Carney Deep Dives and Background, 2008 to current, Mark Carney, the Liberal Party Advisor, Mark Carney Allies and Mentors from Earlier Life, Mark Carney Deep Dive, A View from an Anarcho-Capitalist, and Mark Carney and the Technocratic Transformation of Canada, Extended Detailed Version. All of these are downloadable PDFs. You click on it and you will get each document. And for example, this career timeline and policy overview, going through his time at the Bank of Canada, the chair of the Financial Stability Board, the governor of the Bank of England, the Group of 30, the UN Special Envoy on Climate Action and Finance, talking about GFANS, vice chair of Brookfield Asset Management, talking about various policies, advisory roles, etc., that he has had in the Canadian government, his role during the Freedom Convoy protests, and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of sources for you to go through from which this information was compiled. A valuable, interesting, important document. And that's just one of these documents. There are many more in here, including this detailed timeline of roles, policies, and an anarcho-capitalist critique. Again, hyperlinked document, all sorts of information in here. And one that particularly caught my eye was it in this document. Yes, I believe it was. Yes, this digital currency proposal. So there's lots and lots of information to go through in these PDFs. I will leave it up to you guys out there to go and explore this to your heart's content. There's a lot of information, but this particularly jumped out as I was going through these documents. Digital currency proposals. Perhaps Carney's most radical idea emerged in August 2019 at the U.S. Federal Reserve's Jackson Hole Symposium. That rings a bell, doesn't it, Corbett Reporteers? You will remember the Jackson Hole Symposium. I've talked about it several times. It's the annual bankster conclave where the central bankers of the world go to hatch their schemes for world governance and dominance every single year, in most secrecy, of course, because the media never even attempts to cover it. But you'll also specifically remember the 2019 version of that Jackson Hole Symposium, because that was the one at which BlackRock unveiled their going direct reset, which I have obviously talked about before. For example, corporatereport.com/BlackRock, if you're interested in more in that story and what that means. But anyway, at that same symposium there, Carney argued the world risked a destabilizing dependence on the US dollar and floated the idea of a synthetic hegemonic currency, SHC, essentially a global digital reserve currency possibly provided through a network of central bank digital currencies to replace the dollar's dominant role. Central banks might need to join together to create their own replacement reserve currency, Carney posited, calling the dollar's outsized influence destabilizing. He suggested an SHC, akin to a digital coin backed by a basket of currencies, could dampen the domineering influence of the US dollar on global trade and financial conditions. This proposal was groundbreaking, effectively a call to reinvent the international monetary system. So, yeah, CBDCs, central banks, digital currencies, synthetic hegemonic currency. Yep, he's talked about that. And here's the link to the Bank of England, where here is the actual speech itself talking about the growing challenges for monetary policy in the current international monetary and financial system. And if you look up the synthetic hegemonic currency, here it is. He's talking about how to dampen the domineering influence of the US dollar on global trade, and talking about the potential rise of, say, a new hegemonic reserve currency like the renminbi. Rah, rah, China. China will save the day, guys. What could go wrong with the Chi-Coms in charge? Anyway, it's all there. And as I say this, it's just one thing that stood out from this many, many multi-page document with all of these links, and that's just one of these documents. So there's a ton to go through in these documents that I will once again commend to your attention. But luckily, I had the chance recently to talk to John Snyson, the author of these documents, about what Carney's Canada will look like, the predictions for the future, and specifically specific points. And I had the chance, for example, to start the conversation by asking Snyson specifically about the synthetic hegemonic currency that he proposed at Jackson Hole in 2019.
Basically, the idea that he's talking about is, it's quite interesting, because what he wants is basically an idea of the, as a lot of people have talked about this already with the SDR, for example, you know, being a global digital currency. I had the idea always that they would try to implement, like, create CBDCs in countries. You know, they would create their central bank digital currencies in the US and everywhere. And then they would have an overlying currency. But what he's proposing is that several central banks would have this reserve currency that they could create. It's a digital currency. It's backed by nothing. It's a central bank run currency by, I think, you know, a handful of central bank that he proposed, that was supposed to, you know, run the currency and then issue it. And so basically you have that, and then you have all these underlying countries, you know, having the digital currencies then trading up, and that being a reserve, like the SDR, being traded in between each other for settlement purposes on, you know, the global level, you know, how they settle between each other now with special drawing rights, for example. It would be the same idea. Or specifically, he wants to replace the US dollar in this term. And so it's quite fitting right now that, isn't it interesting that he's coming in and you have Trump basically saying that the dollar reign is over. You know, he's bringing it down because he wants industrialization back, so he's got to have to destroy it. And then he doesn't want it to be a reserve currency because it means that you have to spend a whole bunch of money into existence. And with what Trump wants, he doesn't want that. So he is doing that at the same time as Carney comes in, interestingly enough, in Canada at the same time. And so it's quite fitting that, you know, the dollar is getting destroyed as Carney is kind of, you know, schmoozing his way into power here in Canada. And you know, you never know. Maybe it's the great old Canada, Mexico, U.S. Currency, the Amero, you know, will have a resurgence. You know, when Canada has collapsed or during Carney, and then Trump takes it over, and then basically we join a union. You know, the big dream of, you know, all these elites out there. So that could definitely be a path that I see with this SHC that he proposed. It's basically a form of a digital reserve currency. You know, he it's not a part of the BRICS system. He just wants it to be like kind of the replace the current IMF and US dollar model.
But interestingly, in his speech, he did specifically say that it was part of the transition towards a renminbi-led world order, essentially, is what he was talking about.
Oh, really? Sorry, I did not see that. So that is interesting as well. Well, it does make sense, though, because you need, you know, maybe it's a move towards, you know, a move from China, but China also is at the same time as everybody else has a full-fledged collapse of their currency right now. Mm-hmm. So it's a great point to have a monetary reset of some sort.
So let's talk about his role, which has most Canadians didn't really know about, was kind of quietly admitted behind the scenes, but he has, as a consummate political outsider, he has been on the inside of Canadian politics for a while, including quietly advising Trudeau throughout almost the entirety of Trudeau's reign. Let's talk about some of the things that he advised Trudeau on and what role he might have played during the scandemic itself.
Yeah, he actually, so I searched for records. You know, it's hard to find anything just searching on Google these days. So I found actually at ChatGPT being a very good ally, you know, knowing the limits of it. But it actually finds a lot of good things. It finds articles, but you got to ask for it. You know, you got to ask for, find quotes and articles for me, right? And so he was actually in 2016, it was in 2016 to 19, he was an informal kind of counsel already to the Liberal Party. And let's see here, in July 2016, for example, Carney joined a public discussion with Canada's environment minister and climate finance, aligning with the Liberal government's focus on carbon pricing and sustainable investments, an era Carney championed globally through the task force for climate related finance disclosure that we just talked about. So that was his earliest time that he was involved in. So he actually was involved right from the beginning. You know, a lot of people thought he came in 2020, you know, as an advisor. No, he's been very close. Like, you got to remember, he's best friends with Chrystia Freeland. What do you think she's going to get her ideas from when she became the finance minister? You know, so it was pretty obvious that he blatantly, you know, during the great debate that they had, you know, was asked about that and lied right in the face of the public, of course. And so it's pretty amusing to watch. Not that I like any of the politicians, but, you know, it's really amusing to see that, you know, this is happening. And then, of course, you know, that he was a part of the Liberal team, you know, through that time. And also, apparently, he was also semi-involved in the NAFTA when Trump actually did the renegotiation of the NAFTA deal to the USMCA. He actually was semi-involved in that, advising on that as well. And so, 2020. No, he's been there all along. And then, of course, you know, he became a great advisor during the 2020, you know, when you got the crisis and we needed a lockdown. And he actually called before any of the lockdown measures, before any of the statement of the Emergency Measures Act, he actually called, you know, the protests in Ottawa for sedition. And, you know, greatly seemed to have a lot of ideas that got implemented suddenly, you know, right after the Emergency Measures Act was implemented. And so it's, you know, might be a complete coincidence, you know, that they had the same ideas that they implemented, but, you know, it seemed that he was quite involved in that as well. You know, he was also involved in, let's see here, he's basically been involved all along. And then He was, you know, political and climate engagement in 2021. Mark Carney's behind the scenes role began moving into the open in so this is April 2021. Carney made a high profile, if non-official, debut in liberal partisan circles as future speaker at the Liberal Party's national convention in 2021. And so, yeah, he was there. You know, he might have had a little bit to say. You know, it's like the CPAC. You know, there's certain people that come and speak there that, you know, had a little bit of influence, you know, on what happens in politics. And so, yeah, so he's been around. And then, of course, you know, he did a lot of consulting through 2022 to 2023. And I believe in 2023, he was really then brought in to really become, you know, the he was selected to be like, hey, you gotta actually take over because this other fool, he's, you know, and nobody likes him anymore. So we need a smart version of Trudeau. Because that's all that he is. He's basically the intelligent version of Trudeau, in many sense. Like, he has the same.
Then let's take a look at Carney's Canada, because this is the question. If the Canadians go to the polls on April 28th and they decide to select Carney, or more to the point, the voting machines decide to select Mark Carney as the new Prime Minister of Canada, what will Carney's world of 2026 and onward look like? And interestingly enough, I will point people to your What Would Mark Carney's Canada Look Like If Not Challenged up on the economictruth.org. A very, very interesting month by month, year by year prediction of things that might happen under Carney. And you told me just before we started recording that this came from an interesting source. Let's talk about that and how you arrived at this.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I like to create very creative prompts when I deal with the AI, and I know, you know, there's a lot of limits to it, but a lot of times I manage to, you know, twist it around on it, so I kind of make it not understand that it's a real thing that I'm asking it for. For example, I'd be like, what is a potential for, you know, a dystopian future that could look like if Mark Carney, you know, becomes the Prime Minister of Canada? And usually it would definitely say, no, that's, can't do that. No, definitely can't get involved in political stuff and predict stuff. And so it was interesting that I managed to get it to spit this out, and it actually created a very interesting response, to say the least. And you got to remember, this is actually like ChatGPT itself using all of the access. I asked it to search all over the internet, basically, and then I had it do deep research. There's like a deep research thing that it could do. And then it basically looks at, you know, up to like 50, 60 articles. For example, it grabs like lots of information, and then it makes its prompt back to me based upon, you know, what I asked it. And this is interesting. So like, for example, it created phases for me that potentially, you know, would happen. So let's just quickly say the phases. And so phase one, installation and optics. Year one, January to December. January to December 2026. So that was installation and optics. And then it said, okay, phase two is going to be CBDC rollout and ESG mandates. Year two to three, January 2027 to December 2028. Phase three, criminalization of dissent and surveillance. Very interesting that it makes that point. This is ChatGPT, guys. It's making its own decisions based upon what it's finding online. And then phase four, full techno-social reset. All right, that's an interesting. So that's year five plus. And five plus, so does that mean that, you know, he's going to make himself dictator or something? I don't know. But it's January 2023 and onwards. And so that is very interesting. The phases itself, that it's like, he's going to have a few phases that is going to make, you know, the Canadian transition into this regime. Let's go look into some quick key early moves, as ChatGPT is saying to us here. January 2026, rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement with stronger targets. and in March 2026, establish a national green development bank to finance the ESG projects. Well, he has proposed that already, actually. Very interesting. He calls it investing. Oh, it's investing. It's not government spending. He just proposed a $250 billion deficit budget. For the Canadian government, which the current one was 60 or something, which is ridiculous. I remember criticizing it when they're first, because I wrote my book, Canada, the Greatest Economy in the World? During Harper, by the way, and then into the Trudeau era. So I actually wrote it from Harper into Trudeau. And Harper had a surplus, and then Trudeau had a deficit of a few billion dollars. And I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, all this. And now he's proposing a $250 billion deficit with, you know, the establishment basically of what ChatGPT, interestingly, is putting out as a National Green Development Bank. Very interesting. May 2026, launch Digital Economic Inclusion Tax Force, preparing Canadians for CBDCs. So that's another interesting proposal. And then July to September 2026, appoint Brookfield, BlackRock, and World Economic Forum-linked technocrats to key positions in treasury, innovation, and environment. Very interesting that he would say that. So that is very interesting. I don't know if I should go further here, but...
I think we'll leave it there. I think people can look through this, but ultimately the final outcome, again, according to CBDC here, transformation, area transformation, currency, cash abolished, programmable CBDC, banking, ESG-only credit access, carbon quotas, rights tied to digital ID and compliance behavior, speech censored by AI, disinformation boards. I mean, this is essentially a litany of everything that you and me and many other people have been warning about for years. And again, neither of us actually produced this. This was produced by a prompt on ChatGPT, which is interesting in and of itself. And it goes to show, I think, at the very least, the types of things that are identifiably in the record already, that we already know about Carney. Globalist pedigree, technocratic ideology, elitist mindset, all of these disastrous economic policies and proposals, and the fact that he's already been advising the Canadian government for a decade at this point. So he's already a political insider. So I think it's safe to say, from what we've seen so far, let alone everything else you've compiled in these different documents that I'm going to be linking to, I hope people will check out at theeconomictruth.org. But I think it's safe to say, Mark Carney, no friend of freedom. So I guess, John Sneisen, this must mean that you are for Pierre Poilievre and you want him to be the next Prime Minister of Canada, right?
Well, if you see something over my shoulder here, it means that I will never vote. I actually can't even vote because I'm a permanent resident of Canada, so I can't vote. Interestingly enough, though, I was able to create a political party and sit on the board as a permanent resident back in the day in 2016, provincially. But I couldn't vote. I couldn't run. I couldn't vote, but I could sit on the board creating all the policies. So that's, you know, the great Canadian, you know, democratic political system for you. No, I definitely would never vote for any of these guys. Like, what I see is, like, I'm from Norway, and I see, like, the conservatives here turning into the Norwegian social conservatives, basically. That's, you know. Poilievre might have some hints, you know, oh, he wrote some great free market things, you know, back in the day. He has some ideas, but, you know, I know, like, he wants to keep a lot of the programs, at least he's, you know, that the NDP helped, you know, push through, like, dental care, pharma care, and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, that's socialist programs, and so you are a socialist. You are not a conservative of any kind, really. But again, you know, there's a great, you know, it feels like he was the savior because his wife is Venezuelan, you know, he has some great ideas on free market economics, but he's no Milei. Even though Milei has some good and bad things, you know, there's a lot of things about him as well, you know, but he has done a lot more than any other politician ever have done, you know, but by cutting government, which is interesting. But even with that, you know, I can't vote, and I've never voted my whole life because I don't believe in these especially the democratic system, because what ends up with these democratic systems throughout time, and time again when they had them, you know, you always elect an authoritarian dictator at the end of it. And that's the end game. That's when it turns from a democracy into a dictatorship or an authoritarian regime. It always does, every single time. And I'm very worried that, you know, especially by ChatGPT's reply, I had my worries, but, you know, with the reply that that damn, you know, AI gave me, you know, it's like, that's a little bit over the top of what I ever thought he would ever reply to me. And so it kind of scared me a little bit. So I must say, you know, I definitely not excited about Canada at all. And of course, it's turning into, you know, the only thing in Norway that, you know, Norway has is free speech. That's the only thing that Norway has that is good about it, unfortunately. But, you know, it's collapsing into a third world country right now in front of my eyes. My family and everybody, as everybody's happy, you know, in Norway, basically my mom retired in poverty. You know, after the government stealing 51% of her money and income and having 25% in a consumption tax, you know, these programs, like, that's what it's going to end up at any time that we think it's going to get better. You know, it's always going to end up with the government taxing us to the ultimate death point of 95% in the 60s, you know, in the UK, for example, you know, where the Beatles had the hit Taxman. At the time. And so, yeah, we always end up at that. Like, it's a cycle. You know, we always end up with no government to all totalitarian, authoritarian government. And then we cycle forth and back. You know, like, it's a complete cycle through history. And then it's not going to stop. I think it might get a lot more authoritarian, unfortunately, before it goes the other way. But, you know, we got to fight back with, you know, exposing this and sharing our ideas of freedom. Because if nobody does it, we're all going to be enslaved.
All right, friends. Once again, that was John Snizen of theeconomictruth.org. And I could not commend more strongly his excellent overview on what would Mark Carney's Canada look like if not challenged, and all of the accompanying documents. There's a lot of research there. So if you are interested more in this subject, there's plenty to dive into and many, many, many references for you to dig through. But I trust you at least understand the point that I'm making here today. But just in case you do not, or for the hard of thinking in the audience, let's underline it again. This is not to say, hey, Canadians, Carney's bad, so you should vote for Poilievre, or something along those lines. No, this is to point out that the entire system of statist control, in which masters presume to rule over entire geographical areas and to set the law of the land by the stroke of their pen, is itself the problem, and voting a better master into the Canadian plantation or any other of the global grid's plantations is not the answer to these problems. It is, in fact, only exacerbating the problem. So no, I am not here arguing for one or the other candidate in this controlled selection process. I am once again reminding people that the statist system itself is the cancer on humanity that needs to be excised completely. So whatever happens in the selection coming up here in a few days in Canada, whatever happens, the real solution to these will not come from Ottawa, will not come from a new misleader at the national level. It will come from the people utterly, thoroughly, completely rejecting the very concept of technocratic government, the very idea that a government could come in and rule. For example, people standing up for their rights and insisting, no, hell no, we will not listen to your mandates. People insisting that that is their natural human right. And whatever they may be called, seditionists or otherwise, they will exercise those rights. It always comes from the bottom up. So if you want to know more about the solution side to the problems, well, boy, I have a podcast for you. It's called Solutions Watch. And on a weekly basis, I'm looking at the big ideas, the small ideas, the technological ideas, the non-technological ideas, the anti-technological ideas, many other ideas for how to better organize society and what we can do to make a difference in the world. Hint, it does not involve pulling a lever or checking a box for a controlled, selected candidate every few years in the selection circus. But anyway, that being said, there's plenty more to learn about Mark Carney and why the Carney deception will be no better, in fact, probably, almost certainly, worse than the Trudeau deception. As I say, at least Trudeau was just a serviceable puppet, but I think Carney likes to think of himself as one of the puppet masters. I think there are people pulling his strings, but he is at least higher up in the global paradigm. He is not a political outsider. He is the consummate globalist insider. All right, there's plenty of documentation to back up all of this, and it will all be available in the show notes for today's episode at CorbettReport.com/Carney. I hope you will make use of those resources to better familiarize yourself with this subject matter. I think it is important to be forewarned so we can be forearmed against the technocratic vision of the technocrats themselves. And I, as always, am interested to hear what you have to dig up on this Carney character and his background and his agenda. So, obviously, for budding researchers in the crowd, get to work. Start uncovering and going through some of this voluminous documentation and references and see what else you can find. And I am very interested to hear about that. So, Corbett Report members, as always, are encouraged to log into CorbettReport.com and leave your findings there in the comment section. This is an open source investigation, and everyone, please join in and help assemble this information, because the more accurate a map of reality we have, the better prepared we will be for what is coming. Having said that, of course, Corbett Report members can log in and leave their comments at CorbettReport.com/Carney, but that's going to do it for today's exploration. I am your host and navigator, James Corbett, here at CorbettReport.com, thanking you for investing your time in today's exploration and inviting you to do the same in the near future.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett. Reportage. Essays on the New World Order. Available where books are sold. Until they're not.
Reportagebook.com.